Here's a legal pro tip. If your company has been accused of stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Lego sets, the last thing you should do is go on camera with YouTube's most popular detective, known for killing giants, and start admitting that you were wrong or mistaken and start walking back your own allegations. And yet, that's not only what the owners of Bricks and Minifigs did, but that's also what the subsequent franchisee and the original franchisee did as well. That is not going to play well in their various lawsuits. People, not talking is always an option too. And remember, it's always Friday somewhere.
I asked them, do they have the Legos?
What I can tell you is that we don't have it. We've never had access to it.
And for multiple reasons, it seems like everyone is making prejudicial statements that are bad for the various cases and the various defenses. And we started our coverage of this whole Lego saga by saying that everyone should have talked to a lawyer earlier. I guess we also should have specified that they should keep talking to a lawyer once they have one. I am frankly shocked that the lawyers signed off on their clients' interviews in this whole thing, but we'll get into that. Now, we and everyone else has covered the facts in depth, but a quick recap of how we got here. Bricks and Minifigs is a franchisor of Lego resale stores. Franchising means the local store is independently owned. Corporate licenses the brand and takes royalties. In November of 2023, Brian Mansell consigned his father Ed's Star Wars collection to the Salem Kaiser Oregon store, then run by franchisee Crystal Law Gorman and her husband Benjamin Gorman. Consignment means that you keep ownership and the store sells your stuff and takes a cut once it's been sold. Mansell and the Gormans publicized a value of around $200,000, but that was always unrealistically high, and this number could never be exact. CoffeeZilla, in his investigation, puts the number probably somewhere in the middle, around $100,000 to $110,000, and others who are far more knowledgeable about this than I am also seem to concur that that is a much more reasonable number. But at base, the Mansell collection consisted of hundreds of Lego sets in sealed condition, which everyone agrees was pretty valuable. Crystal Law and Mansell agreed to terms sometime around October or November of 2024, and the store sold Mansell's Lego for over a year. Then, in November of 2024, Law and Gorman announced that they were moving overseas. Bricks and Minifigs Corporate terminated their franchise agreement and repossessed the store overnight. The parties obviously disagree about how that closure went down. The Salem store then changed hands twice. In November, Bricks and Minifigs Corporate, quote, acquired the store's assets as a bona fide purchaser for value without actual or constructive notice of the consignment agreement. As we've talked about in the past, bona fide purchaser for value will be important, and we'll talk about that again today, because a huge portion of Bricks and Minifigs' legal theory depends on the idea that the corporation had no meaningful notice that the Salem store had possession of some of Mansell's Lego sets. In January of 2025, Corporate started the process of selling the Salem franchise to Josh Johnson and Brandon Best, and the sale was completed in March. And everyone agrees that within 48 hours of the takeover, Mansell asked the store to return the unsold Lego sets. At the time, the store was officially in the hands of Corporate, but it was already being overseen by Johnson and Best. They told Mansell that they didn't have his collection, weren't a party to his agreement, and that the company owed him nothing. And for over a year, Mansell tried to verify which of his sets were still in the store. His lawyer sent them a demand letter, but that went nowhere. And that's how Mansell met Ben Schneider, better known as YouTube's Reckless Ben. Ben then waged a campaign against the store, the franchisees, and Corporate in a quest to get the company to return Brian's lost Lego sets, or at least compensate him for the sets that weren't sold. And for more on that, you can check out our earlier videos for more about Reckless Ben's arrests and the underlying dispute. Now that takes us to all of the new acts and evidence that have come to light, and all of the lawsuits that are flying back and forth. But first, we have to talk about one of the most controversial aspects of our last video. I'm, of course, referring to the plural of Lego. Yes, as hundreds of you mentioned, the plural of Lego is Lego. You are all technically correct. And no, I don't care. It sounds dumb, and I will die on that hill. My first Lego sets were Classic Town, Futuron, Blacktron, and Space Police 1. So don't cite the deep magic to me. I was there when it was written. But please do continue leaving comments telling me that I'm wrong. Honestly, leave too. Thanks for the engagement. So if you pointed that out, you all get 1 point. But actually, Lego is not spelled L-E-G-O with lowercase letters. It has to be L-E-G-O, all capitalized. So if you left a comment pointing out the pluralization, but failed to use the correct capitalization, you get negative 1,000 points. I'm sorry, I don't make the rules. But in all seriousness, the reason I don't care and choose to intentionally not participate in this particular linguistic convention is that it's corporate branding. It's advertising for the Lego Corporation. Sure, the Lego brand guide says that Lego is an adjective. So they say you should refer to Lego sets or Lego bricks. But here's the thing. If I want to get 10 blue marbles and I refer to that by saying, hey, give me 10 blues, Everyone knows what you're talking about. That's a totally normal way to pluralize things, even if it is a singular adjective. But I also don't care what some giant, multinational, multi-billion-dollar company wants, and I refuse to let the Danish tell me how to speak English. So I'm not going to blindly follow what the corporations tell me to do. So let's talk about all of these putatively stolen Legos. Now, obviously, Reckless Ben's campaign generated a staggering amount of bad publicity for Bricks and Minifigs and its franchisees, and that's when the legal war began. In May, the Gorman sued Bricks and Minifigs over the franchise repossession, and on May 27th, Bricks and Minifigs, which is run by the brothers Matt and Eamon McNeff, joined with Johnson and Best to file a sweeping civil lawsuit against the Gormans, Mansell, Reckless Ben, Victor Nguyen, and others. Basically, in that case, the plaintiffs alleged the defendants engineered and organized a conspiracy to destroy Bricks and Minifigs. Now, what's interesting is that Bricks and Minifigs and the other defendants are represented by Dentons. Dentons is one of the largest law firms in the world. But ironically, Dentons is one of the most unusual large law firms in the world, and many lawyers describe it as being franchise-like. Because frankly, it would be weird for a giant worldwide law firm to have a local law firm in Utah. But Denton's strategy, unlike almost every other big law firm in the world, is grow by combining the existing local firms around the world rather than building offices organically. So instead of opening a new office in a country or state and hiring lawyers from scratch, Denton's often just merges with a local law firm and allows that firm to retain a significant degree of local autonomy. This has allowed Denton's to become one of the largest law firms by headcount in the world, with thousands of lawyers across dozens of countries. But they don't really fully share in profits firm-wide, though they do share in marketing technology and referrals. Hence why a lot of people say that this law firm functions like a franchisor-franchisee relationship. And here, Bricks and Minifigs is represented by Dentons, Durham, Jones, and Pinniger, located in Lehi, Utah, which I'm assuming started the same way as a local Utah firm. So while Bricks and Minifigs is represented by a big, scary law firm, maybe not quite as scary as most big, scary law firms. And interestingly, the Bricks and Minifigs complaint lists three lawyers working on this case. Two associates who have only been practicing for 1 and 3 years, respectively. And then the partner on the masthead looks like he's been practicing law for literally 40 years and has a ton of experience, but might have retired 10 years ago to teach part-time and only came to Denton's in 2025. And even then, there was a 6-year gap in his resume between teaching part-time and practicing again starting in 2025. Just very weird. So without going into the substantive legal claims of their suit, call me skeptical of the lawyers working on this case and the law firm representing them. Though on top of that, the lawsuit is a verified complaint for civil RICO, defamation, and other falsehood-related claims, and various forms of conspiracy, as well as some intentional torts like tortious interference with existing prospective economic relations and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Now, between RICO, conspiracy, and tortious interference and intentional infliction of emotional distress, that's sort of the Mount Rushmore of dubious legal claims. They're not impossible to prove, but you're not starting out on the right foot. I tend to see those used improperly more often than I see them actually properly pled. But I digress. But importantly, the Bricks and Minifig plaintiffs assert that Mansell, the Gormans, and Reckless Ben dramatically overstated the value of the original collection and the missing sets in order to extort money. In fact, the complaint uses the word extortion 21 times, and the complaint makes one key claim about the value of the collection, quote, less than $5,000 worth of Star Wars Lego product could be located and identified in the entire residual Salem LLC on-site inventory. But then, 7 days later, the company substantially changed its story. And because of this, I cannot stress enough how critical a legal notepad is when your job depends on making critical decisions in a high-stakes environment. And that's because some of the most important conversations often happen when you're not ready to take notes, which is why you might want to consider getting one of these Note Pros from Plaud. This little guy is honestly such a game changer if you work in law or any other decision-heavy workflows. Plaud is a sponsor of this portion of the video, but I've been loving the crap out of this thing. And if you were running the Bricks and Minifigs Corporation, it probably would have saved you from putting your company into this mess. Because this Note Pro is hands down the most accurate note-taking and transcription device I've ever used. And it's way better than using built-in transcription features from all the apps that you use. In fact, just the other day, I spent hours plotting out this channel strategy with my team. And not only did the Note Pro transcribe everything with pinpoint accuracy, but it also generated an easy-to-digest summary of the most important points and action items in a way that I could effortlessly integrate into my own workflow. It does this through state-of-the-art machine learning that's astonishingly smart enough to know what matters most to me and my team. And one thing that I especially like is that the Note Pro supports both in-person conversations and phone calls. But my favorite use is taking this thing on a walk without my cell phone and just talking and thinking out loud. I recently gave a speech in Congress and wrote the whole thing this way. No distractions. And because the Note Pro is a standalone device, it meets enterprise-grade privacy and security standards like SOC 2 and HIPAA, to name a few. It just works. So if your work depends on critical conversations and important details, you should look at a Plaid device. So click or scan and use the code LEGAL20X at checkout for up to 20% off your order. And you can also use this code when you order your Plaid device on Amazon. So order your Plaid device today or I will see you in court. On June 4th, Bricks and Minifigs issued a press release stating an internal review had uncovered, quote, operational gaps during the transition and the subsequent management of document recovery. The company parted ways with Johnson and Best, who presided over that transition, and Bricks and Minifigs revised the value of the original unsold collection to approximately $100,000. Eamon McNeff said, quote, we've been asking for documentation for a long time. We'd asked Mr. Mansell and others and did not receive enough to have a clear picture until recently, thanks to internal and external operations assistance and those who continue to stand with us, and we finally have enough to proceed with a resolution. Now, even before we get to CoffeeZilla, this press release tossed a grenade right at Bricks and Minifig's own lawsuit. Just who were these outsiders who gave them operational assistance? And did they contradict whatever inventory and accounting that Best and Johnson had put forth? And why didn't they have this information a week prior when they filed a 95-page verified complaint? I have so many questions. And believe me, so do all the defense lawyers working for the Gormans, Ben Schneider, and Mansell. Now, additionally, the company offered to give Mansell all of the Lego sets that were located in the Salem store, regardless of whether it could be identified as part of his collection, and they also offered to drop their case. Now, despite all this, backtracking on the collection's value, dumping Johnson and Best for mismanagement, and confirming that some residual Lego inventory actually belonged to Mansell, Bricks and Minifigs did not drop the lawsuit or any of its claims. And then on June 10th, CoffeeZilla released a detailed investigation featuring an on-camera interview with the McNeffs and internal documents that changed the way that everyone thinks about this case. Now, as we've talked about in the past, under normal property law rules, consigned goods cannot be seized to satisfy the consignee's debts because the consignor still owns them. But there's an exception to that rule. Under Utah law, a secured party that takes possession in good faith without actual or constructive notice of a competing claim can cut off the junior interest. And that's what Bricks and Minifigs pleaded in its lawsuit, that it simply had no idea about the consignment, and the complaint says the same principle applies to the next set of franchisees, Johnson and Best. Their theory is that if they didn't have notice, they can't be liable for the consigned goods. But Mansell and Law have said all along that they have spreadsheets. And then CoffeeZilla comes along while interviewing Bricks and Minifigs CEO Eamon McNeff, who opened the file properties on the inventory spreadsheet.
It says owned by BAM Franchising Inc. It says created September 6, 2024.
This is the first I've seen that this spreadsheet was created by Crystal. And we don't know how accurate it is, how up to date it was. We don't know a lot of those types of things. And understand, I appreciate you sharing this with us because we had no idea.
Now, the doctrine of constructive notice provides that a party has notice of a fact when, from all the facts and circumstances known to them at the time, they have reason to know it. And you don't have to actually have seen the document as long as you had a reasonable means of finding out. And this is, of course, separate from the actual notice that they may have had when lots of people were telling them that these Legos belonged to somebody else, including Brandon Best, who was there the night of the takeover. But now we know that there was a spreadsheet created 2 months before the takeover, tracking the consigned collection. And it appears that that spreadsheet is owned by Bricks and Minifigs Franchising and is hosted on the Bricks and Minifigs corporate email address. So it seems like that spreadsheet had been sitting on Bricks and Minifigs' own server infrastructure for years now, which would be very good evidence that the company had notice of the consignment and the inventory. But it gets worse.
Again, you don't know what you don't know, and we don't know everything, and we don't go, looking in every nook and cranny everywhere, we just don't know some of those things. So if that's there, we can now have our team go look for that.
Now, it is problematic for the CEO of Bricks and Minifigs to say that they haven't done a thorough investigation into Mansell's claims, since the McNeffs filed a verified complaint attesting that he looked into every nook and cranny. That's a real problem because Bricks and Minifigs filed a verified Tier 3 complaint in Utah State Court, which means the plaintiffs are seeking over $300,000 in damages. And a verified complaint is a legal document sworn to under oath by the plaintiff, affirming that the allegations are true. And courts often treat sworn factual allegations in a complaint as evidentiary admissions of the party who signed them. And the complaint here was verified by CEO Eamon McNeff and Salem franchisee Josh Johnson. They swore that they investigated the charges and that the allegations were true and correct to the best of their knowledge. So when the complaint says something factual, such as, quote, we found less than $5,000 worth of Lego, we had no notice of the consignment, this was an organized extortion campaign, those are not just arguments from counsel, they are sworn positions of executives. Now, of course, a verified complaint is not conclusive proof that those facts are true. It's basically just like they were on the witness stand and are under oath. The allegations can be challenged through discovery and contradicted by other evidence or ultimately rejected by the court or the jury. However, by verifying the complaint, Amon represented that he did a thorough investigation. And I don't know how thorough that investigation could have been if he never realized where the spreadsheet came from. And that lack of due diligence also came through in the company's June 4th press release. Quote, this evidence confirmed that new incoming franchisees who took over the location were not aware of nor prepared for the responsibilities of taking over a store from a forensic accounting review standpoint. So Bricks and Minifigs has admitted that Best and Johnson, the named plaintiffs on the verified complaint, were not prepared for the responsibilities of running the store. And if that's the case, then why did the McNeffs rely on their accounting in their complaint? How much research did anyone do before filing this thing? And this is also important because the fact that this complaint was verified also probably helped Bricks and Minifigs get a temporary restraining order that restricted speech and putatively requires Reckless Ben to take down all of his videos. Now, nobody really knows exactly how many of Mansell's Legos were in the store when Bricks and Minifigs Corporate repossessed it. Before CoffeeZilla's video, we had two competing narratives. Brian Mansell said that about half of his collection was unaccounted for, but in its lawsuit, Bricks and Minifigs asserted that there was, quote, less than $5,000 worth of Star Wars Lego product could be located and identified in the entire residual Salem LLC on-site inventory. Now, CoffeeZilla hired a team to hand-tag the Mansell collection from over 200 photos and multiple videos of the store on the night of November 14th, 2024.
In the end, I ended up with about $21,000 of Legos matching Brian's collection that can be proven to be in the store on the night of November 14th. Now, to state the obvious, that's about 3 to 5 times what corporate estimated, at least on their press release.
Now, a 3 to 5 times understatement in a verified pleading is not great. Under Utah Rule of Civil Procedure 11B3, factual contentions in a pleading must have evidentiary support. And the lawyer who signs the complaint is responsible for meeting this standard. And the party who verifies the complaint personally certifies the same. So to demonstrate how bad this is, let's watch Matt McNeff revise the number up in real time.
Do you think y'all have all of these?
Very likely.
Okay.
Again, I'd be surprised if we didn't.
But then I couldn't help myself. I started to bring up some of Crystal's photos to see if they matched up.
Have you seen this before?
Not that I recall.
So, do you see that?
Yep, the Vulture Droid.
75169.
169 I'm not seeing, so there may be, okay. So there's one that is not on our list.
Let's try this. 10240?
Okay, nope, not seeing that one either. So you're talking maybe $11,000 to $15,000 total Star Wars, and that's all Star Wars inventory in the whole store.
But the number that Amon McNeff swore to was $5,000, and Matt is now at $13,000 to $15,000 and climbing. The June 4th press release now admits that the original unsold collection was worth at least $100,000, and what's crazy is that none of these numbers match the sworn pleading. However, CoffeeZilla's investigation identified a significant inconsistency from Mansell's side as well.
But even though this is a bigger number than corporate said, I have to admit, even with pretty generous assumptions being made, there's still a huge gap of about $61,000 here that I just couldn't find. But then I learned Brian had made a special side deal with MNR Productions, who had recently purchased some Legos from him. And this is where it starts to get messy.
Mansell wasn't only consigning his collection to the store and waiting for it to sell. On the side, he was also privately selling pieces of it directly to a third party, MNR Productions. When CoffeeZilla compared MNR's photos to Crystal's inventory, he found that some of the Lego everyone assumed was missing from the store wasn't missing at all. Mansell had already sold it himself through his private deal, netting roughly $10,000 to $20,000. Though Mansell maintains that this side deal was a separate batch of Lego that was never consigned to the store. But CoffeeZilla checked and found that 100% of the side deal items that matched the collection were tagged storage on Crystal's consignment spreadsheet.
But I did a check, and 100% of the items that match the Brian collection inventory just so happen to be listed with a location of storage. So this starts to make things incredibly fuzzy, and I'm inclined to believe that a lot of these are part of that same inventory list. Now, if we take that value of the side deal, that's about $10,000 to $20,000 that's not actually missing.
In other words, the supposedly separate Lego looks like it was actually part of the consigned inventory. These revelations gave us a more complete, if complicated, picture of what happened. And assuming what CoffeeZilla presented is accurate, the Salem store had more of Mansell's collection than it admitted. But a chunk of what looked stolen or unaccounted for was sold off by the owner himself. Though it looks like the consigned inventory and Brian's own private sales overlapped and weren't reconciled, so no one can point to a single authoritative number for what should have been in that store on November 14th. So Brixie Minifigs can use this evidence to bolster its narrative that the records they got from Crystal and Ben were unreliable and that they genuinely couldn't tell what was consigned versus sold versus moved, and that asking for verification before paying out was reasonable. But CoffeeZilla's work also undermines Bricks and Minifig's theory that Brian, Ben, and Crystal concocted a crazy scheme to extort the company by grossly inflating the value of the collection. The off-book sales to M&R is an innocent, if messy, explanation for the discrepancy, not evidence of a heist. Though we may never know exactly what happened to the missing Lego sets. However, CoffeeZilla investigated a theory about that.
Do they have the Legos?
What I can tell you is that we don't have it. We've never had access to them.
So now let's talk about what these admissions do to the lawsuit, because this video changes the whole ballgame. And by now you should expect nothing less from a CoffeeZilla investigation. Trust me, there's a reason why he ends up drinking at a bar at the end of every investigation, and it's not just because crime and fraud are rampant. But if you're gonna go to a bar, let me give you a pro tip. This is the pre-alcohol probiotic drink from ZBiotics, and I'm absolutely thrilled that they sponsored me to tell you about it because I've been using this product for years, long before they sponsored this channel. I thought it was nonsense, but it honestly amazes me how well this works whenever you're going to spend a night out drinking, but need to be at your best in the morning. Pre-alcohol is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic invented by a team of PhD microbiologists to tackle the rough mornings after drinking. But you have to drink the pre-alcohol before you start drinking. It's in the name. And that's because of how it works. And yes, I read the peer-reviewed scientific white paper, and you should too. Because when you drink alcohol, your body immediately starts breaking it down into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's the buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration generally, that ruins your mornings. And ZBiotics pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that breaks this toxic byproduct down much faster than you'd otherwise be able to. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel much better in the morning. Seriously, I'm shocked at how well this actually works. Which is undoubtedly why ZBiotics offers a 100% money-back guarantee, no questions asked. Plus, they're offering Legal Eaglets 15% off your first order when you use my code LegalEagle at checkout. So click or scan now to feel better after drinking, or I'll see you in court. Within 48 hours of the takeover, Mansell asked the store to return the unsold Lego sets. At the time, the store was already being overseen by Johnson & Best, and they told Mansell that they didn't have his collection, weren't a party to his agreement, and that the company owed him nothing. Now, Bricks and Minifigs Corporate has suggested it had a right to take the Salem store's inventory to satisfy Crystal Law's alleged debt to the company, but the ex-employee is alleging that Brandon Best not only repossessed the inventory, but also transferred the inventory from Salem to Eugene.
The former employee started in 2024, and I was working under the old manager Brian, and he sold the store to Brandon Best and Josh. Like, oh, Crystal, stole Lego sets and bolted out of the country.
Who says that?
Brandon Best told us. When he was jumping off all the Lego sets to us that night. And there was a bunch of used Lego sets. That sounded like Saran Wrap. They had Star Wars, CD. They had just a lot of stuff. It was like a medium-sized U-Haul truck.
Wait, they brought a U-Haul truck.
Now, ultimately, that's a factual dispute that a jury would resolve, but the ex-employee is not a party to this case. She's a neutral fact witness with no apparent stake in the outcome of the suit, and a jury might believe her. And CoffeeZilla actually asked Bricks and Minifigs COO Matt McNeff about the U-Haul.
I believe I have seen footage from that night that shows clearly out into the parking lot, and there's no U-Haul.
And Matt unequivocally says that there was no U-Haul on November 14th. He insisted the former employee of the Eugene store is conflating two different U-Hauls on two different dates because Brandon took a U-Haul to the Eugene store back on October 24th. But the McNeffs did an absolutely fantastic job of torching their own credibility, even if this U-Haul turns out to be a collateral issue. Coffee then brightened a photo and found a U-Haul in the parking lot on the night of November 14th. When confronted with that, Matt changed his story. He said that the U-Haul wasn't being used to move Legos, it was being used to move a camper trailer. Under this version of events, Brandon Best had been planning to camp in Salem. The rental truck he originally got couldn't tow the trailer, so he rented a U-Haul instead, and that's why the U-Haul was in the parking lot. But CoffeeZilla was skeptical.
The timeline just doesn't fit, to be honest. If it took 4 hours to unload, you can't also drive to another city, load and unload, and drop off the U-Haul in that time.
Now, the last thing you want is an important witness to destroy their credibility. And McNeff's own statements will damage his credibility. And under Utah Rule of Evidence 613, prior inconsistent statements of a witness are admissible for impeachment purposes. And it's also admission by a party, so there's no hearsay problem here. Matt is the COO of a named corporate plaintiff, and he said he viewed the footage of November 14th, said there was no U-Haul in the parking lot, but when confronted with the new evidence, he told a different story. Now, the video doesn't prove conclusively that Brandon Best took Ben's Lego collection to the Eugene store, but we now have photo documentation of a U-Haul, an ex-employee witness, and an inconsistent statement by Matt. So let's review where we are after the CoffeeZilla video. In the course of 7 days, Bricks and Minifigs filed a verified complaint swearing that less than $5,000 in the Mansell Lego collection could be located, that the company had no notice of the consignment, and that Brian, Ben, and Crystal conspired to extort $200,000 to $300,000. They issued a press release admitting that the collection was worth roughly $100,000, that $52,000 of it had been sold during the prior franchisee's tenure, that the franchisees who took over were operationally negligent, and that Bricks and Minifigs was no longer in business with those franchisees. But then they appeared on camera and substantially undercut all of those claims. Now, you can hire the best lawyers in the world, but you can't save a client from themselves. Now, all this highlights why it's so important to get a great lawyer when you're dealing with your own case. Now, after I started this channel, every week I'd get hundreds of comments and emails from viewers who are dealing with legal problems. And they'd ask, can you help me find a lawyer? How do I know if this attorney is any good? And there's a massive gap in our justice system. It's that people don't know how to find the right lawyer for their specific situation. They're scared, they're overwhelmed, and they end up doing nothing or hiring the first attorney who calls them back. And that really bothered me. So I started to wonder, what if there was a different way? What if we could build a law firm that actually lived up to the values that I talk about on this channel? Transparency, accessibility, and putting clients first instead of chasing billable hours. A firm where you don't need to pay anything up front, and your lawyers only get paid if you do, to maximize your opportunity for justice. So a few years ago, I decided to fix that problem. I decided to start my own personal injury law firm. And honestly, it wasn't an easy choice. But I realized I was in this unique position. I had this platform, this community, and the experience. Not to get rich, trust me, there are easier ways to make money than starting a law practice. But we did it because access to justice shouldn't be a luxury. Because finding the right legal representation shouldn't feel like playing Russian roulette with your future. And when you work with my firm, you're not just getting a lawyer. You're getting a team that understands that behind every case is a real person with real stakes. If we can't represent you or you're in a state where we don't practice, we'll take the time to try to match you with an attorney in my personal network of lawyers. A national network of some of the best lawyers in the country who actually specialize in what you're going through, located right where you are, not just whoever happens to be available. So if you're dealing with a personal injury, a car crash, a data breach, sexual harassment, a Social Security or workers' comp issue, give us a call at the number on screen or click on the link below. Now, I can't represent everyone that watches this channel. I wish I could, but what I can do is make sure that when you need legal help, you have somewhere to turn to that you can trust. So whether it's me handling your case or the incredible attorneys we've partnered with, you'll get the same principles of honesty and education that we bring to every video. And if you're dealing with a legal issue and you're not sure where to start, check out the link in the description. Let's have a conversation about how we can help you find not just a lawyer, but the right lawyer for your situation. Because at the end of the day, that's what this is all about, making sure that when life gets complicated, you don't have to face it alone. Which is why when you need a lawyer, you don't just need a legal team, you need the Eagle Team.